use them against one another. But Cassius and I have always been of one mind in battle, and Mustang is adaptable. So Aja chooses the second option, an all-out attack on me, before Cassius or Mustang can come to my aid. She deems me the weakest enemy. And she is right. Her whip cracks toward my face faster than I can bring my blade up. I flinch back, almost losing my eye, throwing my center off balance. She is on me, blade rigid, poking at me in a poetic frenzy of carefully constructed movements to bring my blade out of position across my body so she can perform Lorne's maneuver called the wing scalp, where she tries to lever her blade atop mine to touch the tip to my sword arm's shoulder and scrape down to the outside of my wrist to peel off the muscle and tendons along the way. I dance back, robbing her the leverage, navigating the corpses behind me as Cassius and Mustang close on Aja. Cassius is rushed in his approach, and he overextends, like I almost did. But Aja doesn't use her razor. She activates her grav boots in a quick burst and launches back at him, 200 kilograms of armor and peerless scarred, propelled by grav boots, crashes into flesh and bones. You can almost hear his skeleton creak. His body wraps around her, forehead smashing against her armored shoulder. He drips off her, and she spikes him to the ground. Mustang rushes her flank to stop her from finishing Cassius off, but Aja was expecting the rush from Mustang and uses Cassius to bait her. She slashes Mustang shallowly across the stomach, nearly opening her lower intestine. I hurl my razor at Aja from behind. She somehow hears or feels it coming, and bends sideways as it passes and sticks into the wall of the holodeck that separates it from the sitting room above. Aja's leg shoots out at Mustang, impacting her kneecap and jamming it backward. Can't tell if it dislocates, but Mustang stumbles back, razor outstretched, and Aja turns back toward me, because I have no weapon. Shit, 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 shit! I hiss, scrambling toward the Praetorians to pick up one of their razors. I gain a pulse rifle and fire blindly behind me. Aja's pulse shield absorbs the munitions, throbbing crimson as she sprints at me and slashes the weapon from my hand. I escape again, rolling backward, taking a long burning gash on the back of my hamstrings, but gaining a razor as I jump out of the holodeck ring up to the sitting level several feet above. She picks up a pulse fist and shoots it at me. I dive down so she loses her shot. The steel ceiling above me bubbles and drips down. I roll to the side. Razors keen on the deck bellow. I scramble back to the lip to get back in the fight. Aja's cutting us to ribbons, and all fleeing does is allow her to turn back to Cassius and Mustang. She bears down on him, using his limp against him and the new wound in his shoulder. Mustang attacks from behind before he's cut down, but Aja bends when Mustang slashes, moving like she's studied the fight before it ever happened. We're not going to put her down, I realize. This was our fear. Losing my hand was never part of the plan either. One by one, she's going to kill us. I have a brief moment of hope when Mustang and Cassius finally pin Aja between them. I jump down to help the assault. The woman pivots and twirls like a willow caught among three tornadoes. She knows her armor will take our glancing blows, but our skin can't take hers. She goes for shallow cuts, bleeding us out methodically, aiming for the tendons in our knees, arms, like Lorne taught us both. A sage digging the roots. Her blade cuts deep into my forearm, lacerates my knuckles, taking off a corner of my pinky. I roar anger, but anger isn't enough. My instincts aren't enough. We're too spent, too overwhelmed by the monstrosity of her. Lorne trained her too well. Spinning, she delivers a two-handed thrust up into the right side of my ribcage. My world rocks. She lifts me up with a horrible bellow. My feet dangle half a meter above the deck. Cassius charges her, and she flings me off the edge of her blade to parry his attack. I crashed to the ground, my chest feeling like it is caving in on itself. Gasp for air, barely able to draw breath. Cassius and Mustang put themselves between Azja and me. Do not touch him! Mustang hisses. The blade missed my organs, wedging itself between two of the reinforced ribs Mickey gave me. But I'm bleeding all over myself, trying to stand, scrambling across the deck. The jackal watches me from his place on the ground, exhausted from trying to free himself. He's grinning, despite the horror of bodies all around us, knowing Azja is going to kill me. The Sovereign's face, distant and fading, she watches too, propped up against the lip of the holodeck as it rises to the rest of the room, Lysander's hands holding her together. Azja looks at her in fear, knowing she has not long to live. How could you choose him over us? Azja shouts in rage to Mustang and Cassius. Easily, Mustang replies. Cassius pulls the syringe from the holster on his leg and tosses it across the room to me. Do it before she kills us, man! I stumble to my feet as Azja tries furiously to get at me. But Cassius and Mustang have strength enough to batter her away. She roars in frustration, the three slipping on blood. My friends, not long for this world, standing toe to toe with her. I make it to the edge of the holodeck, opposite the Sovereign, and climb towards Severo's body.
You cannot run, Azja shouts. I will carve your eyes out. There's nowhere to run, you rusty coward.
But I am not running. I fall to my knees beside Severo. The front of his chest is a chaos of laboratory blood and torn fabric from the entry wounds of Cassius's execution. I cut open his shirt with my razor. Six holes stare up at me from the combat vest Scyther made for him, bits of carved flesh looking so real. His face is quiet and peaceful. But peace isn't in his nature, and we haven't earned it yet. I pop open the syringe filled with Holliday's snake bite. Enough to wake the dead. Even those faking eternal sleep from Nero's wicked cocktail of Himanthus extract. I pull off his vest. Wakey, wakey, goblin, I say, as I lift high the syringe, praying the silent prayer that his heart doesn't fail, and plunge it straight into my best friend's chest. His eyes burst open.
Fuck!
Chapter 62 Omnis Vir Lupus. Exploding upward out of the coma induced by the Himanthus oil in the flask he was drinking from before we freed Cassius, he flails past me, gaining his feet, looking around with manic, wild eyes, hands vibrating, holding his heart, gasping in pain, as I did when Trigg and Holliday brought me from my prison. The last thing he saw was my face on the brig. Now to wake here, to be thrust into the battle, blood and bodies littering the floor. He stares at me with crazed, bloodshot eyes, pointing at my belly.
You're bleeding! Darrow! You're bleeding!
I know.
Where's your hand? You're missing a fucking hand!
I know.
Bloody damn!
His eyes dart around, seeing the jackal pinned and Octavia on the ground, Azja beating Cassius and Mustang back.
It worked! It fucking worked!
We've got to help the Gullbrow, shithead. Get up! Get up! He hauls me to my feet and shoves my razor back into my hand, rushing into the hollow pit, howling the hideous battle cry we made as children among the frozen pines.
I'm going to kill you, Azja! I'm going to kill you in your face! It's Barker!
The jackal screams from the ground.
Barker's alive!
On the run, Severo scoops up a pulse fist from a dead Praetorian and tramples over the jackal's body, stomping on his face as he grabs the razor that pins the young arch-governor to the ground without stopping. He flies into Azja, firing with the pulse fist, insane with the drugs and the victory he can smell. The pulse blasts ripple over Aja's shield, spreading crimson around her silhouette, impairing her vision enough to finally let Cassius slip his razor through her guard. Still, she twists as it comes, so it only takes her in the shoulder. But then Sevro is on her, stabbing her twice in the small of her back. She grunts in pain, backing away. I join the fray as Aja gains separation, stumbling back from it. But on the ground behind her, she leaves something few humans have seen, a thin ribbon of blood. It coats Sevro's razor. He wipes it from the tip of the blade and smears it between his fingers. Ha ha ha! Well, look at that! You do bleed! Let's see how much more you got in there! He hunches like an animal, stalking toward her as Mustang, Cassius, and I pin her between us, making a square around the greatest living Olympic knight, like a wolf pack come upon a great panther of the forest, shrinking before it as it charges, striking at its hindquarters, slashing at its flanks, bleeding it out. We're a prison of four. Sevro swishes his razor through the air, howling rabidly. Shut up! Aja says, lashing out at him. But Sevro dances back and Cassius and I dart forward, stabbing at her. She parries Cassius's thrust at her neck and his two successive moves, but not in time to counter me. I feign a thrust at her abdomen and slash her shin instead, raking through the metal. Metal sparks and blood coats my blade. Mustang stabs her calf. I dart back as she wheels on me, making her overextend so Sevro can strike again. He does, furiously slashing the Achilles tendon on her right leg. She grunts and stumbles before lashing at him. He dances back. You're gonna die, he says with an evil little hiss. You're gonna die. Shut up! That one's for Quinn, he hisses, as Cassius cuts through the tendons of her left knee. This one's for Ragnar! I impale her right thigh with an underhanded thrust. This one's for Mars! Mustang takes her arm off at the elbow. Aja looks down at the appendage on the ground, as if wondering if it belongs to her. But she's given no respite. Sevro tosses aside his pulse fist, picks the Truth Knight's razor from the ground, and jumps in the air to bring both his swords down into her chest, hanging there, a foot off the ground. Their faces inches from one another, noses nearly touching, as Aja sinks to her knees, setting Sevro back on his feet. Omnis vir lupus. He kisses her nose and jerks his razors out of her chest, letting them slither back into whips around his forearms. Arms outstretched, he backs away from the dying Protean knight, greatest of her age, as she pulses her last blood onto the cold floor. Still on her knees, Aja's eyes drift hopelessly to the sovereign, the woman who became mother to her sisters, who raised her, loved her as truly as anyone who rules the solar system can love, and now dies along with her.
I'm sorry, my liege.
Aja wheezes wet breaths.
Never be.
Octavia manages from her place on the ground.
You burned bright, my fury. Time itself will remember you.
Nah, probably not, Sevro says pitilessly. Nighty-night, Grimace. He lops off her head and kicks her in the chest. Her body teeters back and collapses to the floor, where he jumps atop it on all fours and howls. A deep moan escapes the sovereign's mouth at the hideous sight. She shuts her eyes, leaking tears as we make our way to her and Lysander. Cassius and I limping together, his arm around my shoulders to take pressure off the leg he drags behind him. Mustang follows us. Severo secures the jackal by sitting on his chest and juggling a razor over his head. Soaked in his grandmother's blood, Lysander grabs Octavia's razor from the ground and bars our way.
I won't let you kill her.
Lysander.
Don't, Octavia says.
It's too late.
The boy's eyes are swollen with tears. The razor trembles in his hands. Cassius steps forward and extends a hand.
Drop the weapon, Lysander. I don't want to kill you.
Mustang and I exchange a glance. One Octavia notices, and must make her soul shiver. Lysander knows he cannot fight us. His sense overcomes his grief, and he drops the razor, stepping back to watch us, hollowly. Octavia's eyes are distant and dark, already halfway to that other world where even she does not reign. I thought there'd be spite in the end from her, or begging like Vixus or Antonia. But there's nothing weak in her, even now. It's sadness and love lost that come in the end. She did not create the hierarchy, but she was its keeper in her time. And for that she must be held accountable.
Why?
Octavia asks Cassius, shaking from sorrow.
Why?
Because you lied, he says. Wordlessly, Cassius pulls the small holocube, a thumb-sized triangular prism, from his ammunition belt, and sets it in her bloody hands. Images dance across its surface before floating into the air above the sovereign's hands. The scene of Cassius's family dying plays, bathing her in blue light. Shadows move through a wall, becoming men in scarab skin. They cut down his aunt in a hallway, and the men move through and appear a moment later, dragging children, which they kill with the razors and boots. More bodies are dragged and piled up, then lit on fire so there would be no survivors. More than 40 children and non-scarred family members died that night. They thought they could heap the sin upon the shoulders of a fallen man. But it was the jackal's work. He finished the war between the Bologna and the Augustuses, and the sovereign's cooperation and silence was his price for my triumph.
You ask me why?
Cassius's voice is barely above a whisper.
It is because you are without honor. I swore an oath as an Olympic knight to honor the compact, to bring justice to the society of man. You swore the same, Octavia. But you forgot what that meant. Everyone has. That is why this world is broken. Maybe the next one can be better.
This world is the best we can afford,
Octavia whispers.
Do you really believe that?
Mustang asks.
With all my heart.
Then I pity you, Mustang says. And so does Cassius.
My heart was my brother. And I no longer believe in a world that says he was too weak to deserve life. He would have believed in this, in the hope for something new.
Cassius looks over at me.
For Julian, I can believe that too.
Cassius hands me the two other holocubes from his pouch. The first is the murder of my friends at my triumph. The second is for the rim. When they see this recording, they will know I have struck a blow for them. Politics never rests. I set the two holocubes in the sovereign's hands to join the first. Rhea glows before her. A blue and white moon, gorgeous beside its brothers Iapetus and Titan, as they orbit giant Saturn. Then, over the moon's north pole, tiny slivers which you'd hardly notice, flicker several innocent times, and mushrooms of fire bloom upon the surface of the blue and white planet. As the nuclear fire blazes in the sovereign's eyes, Mustang moves aside so I can crouch before the dying woman, speaking softly so she will know that justice, not vengeance, has found her in the end. My people have a legend of a being who stands astride the road leading to the world after. He will judge the wicked from the good. His name is the Reaper. I am not him. I'm just a man. But soon you will meet him. Soon he will judge you for all the sins you hold.
Sins?
Octavia shakes her head, looking back to the three hollows dancing in her hands, these drops in her ocean of sins.
These are sacrifices. What it takes to rule,
she says, her hands closing around them.
I own them as I own my triumphs. You will see. You will be the same, conqueror.
No, I will not.
In the absence of a sun, there can be only darkness.
She shudders, cold now. I fight off the urge to put something over her. She knows what's being left behind. When she dies, the succession struggle will begin. It'll tear gold apart.
Someone must rule. Or 1,000 years from now, children will ask, who broke the worlds? Who put the light out? And their parents will say, it was you.
But I already know this. I knew this when I asked Severo if he knew how this would end. I will not replace tyranny with chaos. There must be order, even if it is a compromise. But I don't tell her that. She swallows painfully, a struggle to even breathe.
Listen to me. You must stop him. You must stop Atreus.
Those are the last words of Octavia Auloon. And as they fade, the fire of Rhea cools in her eyes, and life leaves a cold pupil surrounded by gold, staring into infinite dark. I close her eyes for her, chilled by her passing, by her words, her fear. The sovereign of the society, who has ruled for 60 years, is dead. And I feel nothing but dread, because the jackal has begun to laugh. Chapter 63. Silence. His laughter rattles through the room, his face pale under the glow of the hollow of the moon and the fleets pummeling one another in the darkness. Mustang has turned off the holodeck's broadcast and is already analyzing the Sovereign's data center as Cassius moves toward Lysander, and I rise above Octavia's body. My body burns from wounds.
What does she mean, stop him?
Cassius asks me. I don't know.
Lysander?
The boy's too traumatized by the horror around him to speak.
Video went out to the ships and the planets, Mustang says. People are seeing Octavia's death. Communique boards are flooding. They don't know who is in control. We have to move now before they marshal behind someone.
Cassius and I approach the jackal.
What did you do?
Severo's asking. He shakes the small man.
What was she talking about?
Get your dog off me, the jackal says from under Severo's knees. I pull Severo back. He paces around, the jackal still vibrating with adrenaline. What did you do? I ask him. There's no point in talking with him, Mustang says.
No point?
Why do you think the sovereign let me in her presence?
The jackal asks from the ground.
He comes up to a knee, holding his wounded hand to his chest. Why she did not fear the gun on my hip, unless there was a greater threat keeping her in line.
He looks up at me from under disheveled hair, his eyes calm despite the butchering we've done.
I remember the feeling of being under the ground, Darrow, he says slowly. The cold stone under my hands. My Pluto house members around me, hunched in the darkness. The steam on their breaths, looking to me. I remember how afraid I was of failing, of how long I had prepared, how little my father thought of me. All my life, weighed in those few moments, all of it slipping away. We'd run from our castle, fleeing Vulcan. They came so fast. They were going to enslave us. The last of our house members was still running through the tunnel by the time I rigged the mines to blow. But so were Vulcan. I could hear my father's voice, hear him telling me how he was not surprised I failed so quickly. It was a week before we killed a girl and ate her legs to survive. She begged us not to, begged us to choose someone else. But I learned then, in that moment, if no one sacrifices, then no one survives. Cold fear wells in me, beginning in the deep hollow of my stomach and spreading upward. Mustang!
They're here, she says, horrified.
What's happening? What's here?
Severo hisses.
Darrow,
Cassius whispers.
The nukes aren't on Mars, I say. They're on Luna.
The jackal's smile stretches. Slowly he gains his feet, and not one of us dares touch him.
It all falls into place. The tension between him and the Sovereign. The subtle threat. His boldness in coming here, into the Sovereign's place of power. His ability to mock Aja without consequence.
Oh, shit! Shit, shit, shit!
Severo pulls his mohawk.
Shit!
I never wanted to nuke Mars, the jackal says. I was born on Mars. It is my birthright, the prize from which all things flow. Her helium is the blood of the Empire. But this moon, this skeleton orb is, like Octavia, a treacherous old crone sucking at the marrow of the society. Crowing about what was instead of what can be. And Octavia let me ransom it. Just as you will, because you are weak, and you did not learn what you should have at the Institute. To win, you must sacrifice.
Mustang, can you find the bombs? I ask. Mustang! She's been struck dumb.
No. He would have masked the radiation signatures. Even if we could, we couldn't deactivate them.
She reaches for the comm to call our fleet.
If you make the call, then I detonate a bomb every minute, the jackal says, tapping his ear where a little comm has been implanted.
Lilith must be listening. She must have the trigger.
That's what he meant. She's his insurance.
Would I really tell you my plan if you could do anything about it? He straightens his hair and wipes blood from his armor. The bombs were installed weeks ago. The Syndicate smuggled the devices across the moon for me. Enough to create nuclear winter. A second Rhea, if you will. When they were in place, I told Octavia what I had done, and I told her my terms. She would carry on as sovereign until the Rising was put down, which has taken a surprising twist, obviously. And afterward, on the day of victory, she would convene the Senate, abdicate the Morning Throne, and name me her successor. In return, I would not destroy Luna. That's why Octavia has the Senate rounded up, Mustang says in disgust. So you could be sovereign? Yes. I stand back from him, feeling the weight of the fight on my shoulders, the weakness in my body from the strain, the loss of blood. Now this evil, this selfishness, it's overwhelming. You're bloody damn mad, Severo says. He's not, Mustang says. I could forgive him if he were mad. Adris, there are 3 billion people on this moon. You don't want to be that man. They don't care for me. So why should I care for them? He asks. This is all a game, and I have won. Where are the bombs? Mustang asks, taking a threatening step toward him. Uh-uh, he says, scolding her. Touch a hair on my head, Lilith detonates a bomb. Mustang's beside herself. These are people, she says. You have the power to give 3 billion people their lives, Adrius. That is power beyond anything anyone should ever want. You have the chance to be better than father, better than Octavia. You condescending little bitch, he says with a small laugh of disbelief. You really think you can still manipulate me? This one is on you. Lilith, detonate the bomb on the southern Mare Serenitatis. We all look to the hologram of the moon above our heads, hoping beyond hope that somehow he's bluffing, that somehow the transmission won't go through. But a little red dot glows on the cool hologram, blossoming outward, a small, almost insignificant little animation that envelops 10 kilometers of city. Mustang rushes to the computer. It's a nuclear event, she whispers. There's more than 5 million people in that district. Were, the jackal says. You freak! Severo shrieks, rushing the jackal. Cassius gets in his path, knocking him back. Get out of my way! Severo, calm down. Careful, goblin. There's hundreds more, the jackal says. Severo's overwhelmed, clutching his chest where his heart must be wrenching from the drugs. Dara, what do we do? You obey, the jackal says. I force myself to ask, what do you want? What do I want? He wraps a bit of cloth around his bleeding arm, using his teeth. I want you to be what you always wanted, Dara. I want you to be like your wife. A martyr. Kill yourself. Here. In front of my sister. In return, 3 billion souls live. Isn't that what you've always wanted? To be a hero. You die, and I will be crowned sovereign. There will be peace. No, Mustang says. Lilith? Detonate another bomb. Mare Anguis this time. Another red blossom erupts on the display. Nuclear fire ends the lives of millions. Stop! Mustang says. Please! Adrius! You just killed 6 million people, Cassius says, not comprehending. They'll think it's us, Severo sneers. The jackal agrees. Each bomb looks like part of an invasion. This is your legacy, Darrow. Think of the children burning now. Think of their mothers screaming. How many you can save by simply pulling a trigger. My friends, look at me. But I'm in a distant place, listening to the moan of the wind through the tunnels of Lycos, smelling the dew on the gears in the early morning, knowing Io will be waiting for me when I come home, like she waits for me now, at the end of the cobbled road, as Nerol does, as Pax and Ragnar and Quinn and, I hope, Roke, Lorn, Tactus, and the rest of them do. It would not be the end to die. It would be the beginning of something new. I have to believe that. But my death would leave the Jackal here in this world. It would leave him with power over those I love, over all I fought for. I always thought I would die before the end. I trudged on, knowing I was doomed. But my friends have breathed love into me, breathed my faith back into my bones. They've made me want to live. They've made me want to build. Mustang looks at me, her eyes glassy, and I know she wants me to choose life, but she will not choose for me. Darrow, what is your answer? No. I punch him in the throat. He croaks, unable to breathe. I knock him down and jump atop him, pinning his arms to the ground with my knees so his head is between my legs. I jam my hand into his mouth. His eyes go wild, legs kicking. His teeth cut my knuckles, drawing blood. The last time I pinned him down, I took the wrong weapon. What are hands to a creature like him? All his evil, all his lies are spun with the tongue. So I grab it with my Helldiver hand, pinning it between forefinger and thumb like the fleshy little baby pit viper it is. This is always how the story would end, Adrius. I say down to him, not with your screams, not with your rage, but with your silence. And with a great pull, I rip out the tongue of the Jackal. He screams beneath me, blood bubbling from the mutilated stump at the back of his throat, splashing over his lips. He thrashes. I shove off him and stand in dark rage, holding the bloody instrument of my enemy as he wails on the ground, feeling the hatred rolling through me and seeing the stunned eyes of my friends. I leave the comm in his ear so Lilith can hear him wailing, and I stalk to the holocontrols and hail Victra's ship. Her face appears, eyes widening at the sight of my face. Darrow! You're alive! She manages. Severo! The nukes! You need to destroy the line of Mars, I say. Lilith is detonating the bombs on the surface. There's hundreds more hidden in the cities. Kill that ship! It's at the center of their formation, she protests. We'll destroy our fleet trying to get to it. It will take hours if we even manage. Can we jam their signal? Mustang asks. No. EMPs, Severo asks, coming up behind me. Victor's face brightens at the sight of him before she shakes her head. They have shielding, she says. Use the EMPs on the bombs to short-circuit their radio transmitters, I say. Fire an iron rain and drop EMPs on the city till they're out. And plunge 3 billion people into the Middle Ages? Cassius asks. We'll be slaughtered, Victor says. We can't drop a rain. We'll lose our army, and gold will just keep the moon. Another bomb detonates, this one nearer the southern pole, and then a fourth at the equator. We know the consequences to each one. Lilith doesn't know exactly what's happened to Adrius, Cassius says quickly. How loyal is she? Will she detonate all of them? Not when he's still whimpering, I say. Least that's my hope. Excuse me, a small voice says. We turn to see Lysander standing before us. We forgot about him and the mayhem. His eyes are shot red from tears. Severo raises a pulse fist to shoot him. Cassius knocks it aside.
Call my godfather,
Lysander says bravely.
Call the Ash Lord. He will see reason.
Oh, like hell,
Severo says. We just killed the Sovereign and his daughter, I say. The Ash Lord
destroyed Rhea,
Lysander interrupts.
Yes, and it haunts him. Call him, and he will help you.
My grandmother would have wanted him to.
Luna is our home.
He's right, Mustang says, pushing me from the console. Daro, move! She's in that locked zone of concentration, unable to relate her own thoughts as she starts opening direct comm channels to the Gold Praetors and the fleet. The towering men and women appear around us like silvery ghosts, standing among the corpses they watched us make. Last to appear is the Ash Lord, his face stricken with rage. His daughter and master, both dead by our hands.
Bellona! Augustus!
He growls, seeing Lysander among us.
Is it not enough?
Godfather, we have no time for recrimination,
Lysander says.
Lysander!
Please listen to them. Our world depends on it.
Mustang steps forward and raises her voice.
Praetors of the fleet, Ashlord, the Sovereign is dead. The nuclear blasts you see destroying your home are not red weapons. They come from your own arsenal, which was stolen by my brother. His praetor, Lilith, is overseeing the detonation of more than 400 nuclear warheads from the bridge of the Lion of Mars. They will continue until Lilith is dead.
My fellow Oriot, embrace change or embrace oblivion. The choice is yours.
You are a traitor,
one of the praetors hisses. Lysander walks off the holopad to the table where he sat earlier. He picks up his grandmother's scepter and returns as the praetors are issuing threats to Mustang.
She is no traitor, Lysander says, handing her the scepter,
the blood of his grandmother staining his hands.
She is our conqueror.
Chapter 64. Hail. The Lion of Mars dies an ignoble death, fired upon from all sides by loyalist and rebel alike. Watching Luna crackle with nuclear explosions did more to kill the bloodlust between the two navies than any peace or truce ever did. Few men truly like seeing beauty burn. But burn it does. Before the Lion is put to rest, more than 12 bombs detonate, carving new cities of fire and ash among those of steel and concrete. The moon is in turmoil, as is the Gold Armada. With news of the Sovereign's death and the detonation of the bombs, the society shudders beneath our feet. Wealthy praetors are taking their personal ships and fracturing away, heading home to Venus, Mercury, or Mars. They do not stand together because they do not know where to stand. For 60 years, Octavia has ruled. For most living, she is the only sovereign they have ever known. Our civilization teeters on the brink. Electrical grids are down across the moon. Riots and panic spread as we prepare to leave the sovereign sanctum. There is an escape ship, but there is no escaping what we've done. We've carved the heart out of the society. If we leave, what takes its place? We knew we could never win Luna by force of arms, but that was never the goal. Just as it was not Ragnar's desire to fight until all golds perished. He knew Mustang was the key. She always has been. That's why he risked our lives to let Kavax go. Now Mustang stands beneath the hollow of the wounded moon. hearing the silent screams of the city as keenly as I. I step close to her. "Are you ready?" I ask.
"What?"
She shakes her head.
"How could he do this?"
"I don't know," I say. "But we can fix it."
"How?"
"This moon will be pandemonium," she says. "Tens of millions dead.
The devastation.
And we can rebuild it. Together." The words flutter with hope, as if she's only just remembered where we are, what we've done, that we're together, alive. She blinks quickly and smiles at me. Then she looks at my arm, where my right hand used to be, and touches my stomach where Aja stabbed me.
"How are you still standing?"
"Because we're not yet done." Battered and bloody, we join Cassius, Lysander, and Severo before the door leading out of the Sovereign's inner sanctum, as Cassius types in the Olympic code to open the doors. He pauses to sniff the air.
"What's that smell?"
"Smells like a sewer," I say. Severo stares intensely at the razors he's taken from Aja, including the one belonging to Lorne.
"I think it smells like victory."
"Did you shit your pants?"
Cassius squints at him.
"You did."
"Severo,"
Mustang says,
"it's an involuntary muscle reaction when you're fake executed and swallow massive amounts of Hemanthus oil."
Severo snaps.
"You think I would do that on purpose?"
Cassius and I look at each other. I shrug. "Well, maybe. Yeah, actually." He flips us the crux and makes a face, twisting his lips till it looks like he's going to explode.
"What's happening?" I ask. "Are you still..."
"No."
He throws his water bottle at me. "You stuck a needle full of adrenaline into my chest, asshole. I'm having a heart attack."
He swats our hands as we try to help him.
"I'm good. I'm good."
He wheezes for a moment before straightening with a grimace. "Are you sure you're prime?" Mustang asks.
"Left arm's numb. Probably need a yellow."
We snort laughs. We look like walking corpses. Only thing keeping me up are the stim packs we found on the Praetorians. Cassius hobbles like an old man, but he's kept Lysander close to him, vetoing Severo's offers to end the loon bloodline here and now by drawing his razor. "The boy is under my protection," Cassius sneered. And now he walks with us, as a sign of our legitimacy. "I love you all," I say, as the door begins to groan open. I adjust the unconscious jackal, who I carry on my shoulder, as a prize. "No matter what happens."
"Even Cassius?"
Severo asks.
"Especially me."
"Today," Cassius says.
"Stay close,"
Mustang says to us, clutching the scepter tight. The first great door parts. Mustang squeezes my hand. Severo vibrates with fear. Then the second rumbles and dilates open to reveal a hall filled with Praetorians, their weapons drawn and pointed into the mouth of the bunker. Mustang steps forward bearing two symbols of power, one in each hand.
"Praetorians, you serve the Sovereign. The Sovereign is dead. A new star rises."
She continues walking toward them, refusing to break her step when she nears their line of bristling metal. I think a young gold with furious eyes might pull the trigger, but his old captain puts a hand on the man's weapon, lowering it. And they break for her, parting and lowering their weapons one by one. They back away to let her pass, their helmets slithering back into their armor. I've never seen a woman so glorious and powerful as she is now. She is the calm eye of the storm, and we follow in her wake, riding the dragon maw lift up in silence. More than 4 dozen of the Praetorians have come with us. We find the citadel in chaos. Servants ransacking rooms, guards leaving their posts in 2s and 3s, worried for their families or their friends. The obsidians we said were coming are still in orbit. Sephi is with the ships. We only created the ruse to draw men from the room, but it seems word has spread. The sovereign is dead. The obsidians are coming. Amidst the chaos, there is only one leader, and as we move through the citadel's black marbled halls, past towering gold statues and departments of state, soldiers gather behind us, their boots stampeding over the marble halls to flock to Mustang, the one symbol of purpose and power left in the building. She lifts both her symbols of power high in the air, and those who first raise weapons against us see them, and me, and Cassius, and the swelling mass of soldiers behind us, and realize they're fighting the tide. They join us, or they run. Some take shots at us, or rush forward in small bands to halt our progress, but they're cut down before they get within 10 meters of Mustang. By the time we come before the great ivory-white doors to the Senate chambers, behind which senators have been sequestered inside by Praetorians, an army of hundreds is at our backs, and only a thin line of Praetorians bars our way to the Senate chamber. 20 in number. An elegant gold knight steps forward, leader of the men guarding the chamber. He eyes the hundreds behind us, seeing the purple adherents Mustang has gathered, the obsidians, the greys, me. And he makes a decision. He salutes Mustang sharply. "My brother has 30 men in the citadel," Mustang says. "The Bone Riders. Find them and arrest them, Captain. If they resist, kill them." "Yes, Lady Augustus." He snaps his fingers and departs with a fist of soldiers. The 2 obsidians guarding the doors push them open for us, and Mustang strides into the Senate chamber. The room is vast, a tiered funnel of white marble. At the bottom center is a podium from which the sovereign presides over the 10 levels of the chamber. We enter on the north side, causing a disruption. Hundreds of beady politico eyes turn their entitled focus toward us. They will have watched the broadcast, seen Octavia die, seen the bombs wrecking their moon. And somewhere in the room, Roke's mother will stand up from her seat on her marble bench and crane her neck to watch our bloody band stomping down the white marble stairs to the bottom center of the great chamber, passing senators to our right and left, bringing silence with us, instead of shouts or protests. Lysander trails behind Cassius. You can hear the rasping, panicked breath of the Senate Majority Speaker as his pink attendants help his withered form down from the podium where he was presiding over something of great importance. They were holding an election. Here, now, in the middle of chaos. And now they look like children who've been caught with their hands in the biscuit jar. Of course they would never suspect that the Praetorians guarding them would support rebels, or that we could walk from the sovereign's bunker unimpeded. But they've created a society of fear, where men and women must attach themselves to a rising star to survive. That's all this is, that simple human directive that allows for this coup to work. The old power is dead. See how they flock to the new. Mustang takes the podium with the rest of us flanking her. I toss the jackal to the ground so the Senate can see what has become of him. He's unconscious and pale from blood loss. Mustang looks at me. This is a moment she never wanted. But she accepts it as her burden, just as I've accepted mine as Reaper. I see how it troubles her. As she will need me, as I've needed her. But I could never stand where she stands, or hold what she holds. Not without destroying everyone in this room. They would never accept it. If I am the bridge to the low colors, then she's the bridge to the high. Only together can we bind these people. Only together can we bring peace. Senators of the Society, Mustang proclaims, I stand before you, Virginia Au Augustus, daughter of Nero Au Augustus of the Lion House of Mars. You may know me. 60 years ago, Octavia Au Lun stood before you with the head of a tyrant, her father, and laid her claim on the post of sovereign to this society. Her keen eyes scour the room. I stand before you now, with the head of a tyrant. She lifts her left hand to show the head of Octavia, one of the two objects which granted us passage here. Gold respects only one thing, and to change they must be tamed by that one thing. The old age has brought nuclear holocaust to the heart of the society. Millions burned for Octavia's greed. Millions burn now for my brothers. We must save ourselves from ourselves before the inheritance of humanity is ash. Today, I declare the beginning of a new age. She looks at me. With new allies. New ways. I have the rising at my back. A navy made of great golden houses which holds the obsidian horde in orbit. You have a choice before you. She tosses the head on the stone podium and raises her other hand. In it is the Dawn Scepter, bestowing upon the bearer the right to rule society. Bend or break. A silence fills the chamber. So vast I feel it might swallow us all into itself and begin the war anew. No gold will be the first to bend. I could make them, but better I bend for them. I fall to my knee before Mustang. Looking up into her eyes, I put my stump over my heart and feel myself swept away by the impossible joy of the moment. Hail, Sovereign, I say. Then Cassius falls to his knees, and Severo, then Lysander Au Lun and the Praetorians, and then, one by one, the senators fall to their knees till all but 50 kneel and break the silence together, shouting with a single riotous voice, Hail, Sovereign! Hail, Sovereign! A week after Mustang's ascension, I stand beside her to watch her brother hang. But for Valiai Wrath and some 10 men, the Jackal's Bone Riders have been found and executed. Now their leader walks past me through the crowded lunar square. His hair is feathery and combed. His prisoner jumpsuit, lime green. The low colors around us watch in silence. A light dusting of snow falls from a thin skin of gray clouds. I'm nauseous from my radiation medication. But I came for her as she came for me to watch Roke buried. She's quiet and serene beside me. Face pale as the marble beneath our feet. The Telemannuses stand beside her, watching impassively as the Jackal climbs the stairs of the metal scaffold to where the white hangwoman waits. The woman reads the sentence. Jeers are shouted from the crowd. A bottle shatters at the jackal's feet. A stone splits his forehead. But he does not blink or buckle. He stands proud and vain as they loop the noose around his neck. I wish this would bring Pax back to us, that Quinn and Roke and Eo could live again. But this man has carved his mark in the world. The Jackal of Mars will never be forgotten. The White moves for the lever, snow gathering on Adrius's hair. Mustang swallows, and the trapdoor opens. On Mars, there's not much gravity, so you have to pull the feet to break the neck. They let the loved ones do it. On Luna, there's even less. But no one comes forward from the crowd as the White extends the invitation. Not a soul lifts a finger as the jackal's legs kick and his face purples. There's a stillness in me watching the sight, as if I'm a million kilometers away. I cannot feel for him. Not now. Not after all he's done. But I know Mustang does. I know this tears her apart. So I lightly squeeze her hand and guide her forward. She moves across the snow in a daze to grip her twin brother's feet, looking up at him as if this were a dream. She whispers something and, lowering her head, she pulls down, showing him he was loved, even at the end. Chapter 65. The Veil. In the weeks following the bombing of Luna and the ascension of Mustang, the world has changed. Millions lost their lives, but for the first time there is hope. In the aftermath of her speech to the Senate, dozens of gold ships defected, joining the forces of Orion and Victra. The Ash Lord did his best to rally his navy, but with Luna burning, his fleet fracturing, and Mustang as sovereign, it was all he could do to keep his own ships from falling into enemy hands. He retreated to Mercury with the core of his forces. In his absence, Mustang has secured the cooperation of much of the military, particularly the Grey Legions and Obsidian Slave Knights. She has used this political muscle to take the first steps to dismantling the Color hierarchy and the gold grip on military power. The Senate has been disbanded. The Board of Quality Control has been dissolved. Thousands face charges of crimes against humanity. Justice will not be so quick as it was with the Jackal, or so clean, but we will do the best we can. I thought I might be able to rest after Octavia was dead, but we are not without enemies. Romulus and the Moon Lords remain on the rim. The Ash Lord aims to rally Mercury and Venus. Gold warlords have begun carving out claims, and Luna itself is a disaster, overrun by riots and shortages of food and spreading radiation. She will survive, but I doubt she will ever look the same, no matter how much Quicksilver promises to rebuild the city to even greater heights. My own body is in recovery. Mickey and Virini reattached my hand, which I retrieved from the Jackal's shuttle that set down on Luna. It will be months before I can write again, much less use a blade. Though I hope I have less cause for that in the coming days. In my youth, I thought I would destroy the society, dismantle its customs, shatter the chains, and something new and beautiful would simply grow from the ashes. That's not how the world works. This compromised victory is the best mankind could hope for. Change will come slower than Dancer or the Suns want, but it will come without the price of anarchy. So we hope. Under the supervision of Holiday, Sephi has set off to Mars to begin the slow process of freeing the rest of her people, visiting the poles with medicine instead of weapons. I remember how dark her eyes seemed when she looked at one of the Jackal's nuclear craters in person. For now, she's embraced the legacy of her brother, and plans to settle on warmer land set aside for her people on Mars. Though she wishes to keep her people from the alien cities, I think she knows deep down that she will not be able to control them. The Obsidians will leave their prisons. They will grow curious, spread, and assimilate. Their world will never be the same. Nor will that of my people. Soon I will return to Mars to help Dancer lead the migration of Reds to the surface. Many will stay and continue the lives they know, but for others, there will be a chance for life under the sky. I said farewell to Cassius the day before last as he departed Luna. Mustang wanted him to stay and help us shape a new, fairer system of justice, but he's had enough of politics. "You don't have to go," I told him, as I stood with him on the landing pad. "There's nothing for me here but memories," he said. "I've been living my life too long for others. I want to see what else is out there. You can't fault me that." "And the boy?" I asked, nodding to Lysander, who moved into the ship carrying a satchel of belongings. "Severo thinks it's a mistake to let him live." What were his words? "It's like leaving a pit viper egg under your seat. Sooner or later it's gonna hatch." "And what do you think?"
"I think it's a different world, so we should act like it. He's got Lorne's blood in his veins as much as he's got Octavia's. Not that blood makes a difference anymore." My tall friend smiled fondly at me.
"He reminds me of Julian. He's a good soul, despite everything. I'll raise him right. Away from all this."
He extended a hand, not to shake mine, but to give me the ring he took from my finger the night Lorne and Fitchner died. I closed his hand back around it.
"That belongs to Julian," I said.
He nodded softly.
"Thank you, brother."
And there, on a Citadel landing platform in what was once the heart of gold power, Cassius, Albalona, and I shake hands and say farewell, almost 6 years to the day since we first met. Weeks later, I watch the waves lap at the shore as a gull careens overhead. White caps mark the dark water that lashes the northern beach's sea stacks. Mustang and I set our little two-person flyer down on the east-northeast coast of the Pacific Rim, at the edge of a rainforest on a great peninsula. Moss grows on the rocks, on the trees. The air is crisp, just cold enough to see your breath. It is my first time on Earth, but I feel like my spirit has come home.
"Io would have loved it here, wouldn't she?"
Mustang asks me. She wears a black coat with the collar pulled up around her neck. Her new Praetorian bodyguards sit in the rocks a half kilometer off.
"Yes," I say. "She would have.
A place like this is the beating heart of our songs. Not a warm beach or a tropical paradise. This wild land is full of mystery. It holds its secrets covetously behind arms of fog and veils of pine needles. Its pleasures, like its secrets, must be earned.
It reminds me of my dreams of the Vale. The smoke from the fire we made of driftwood rises diagonally across the horizon."
"Do you think it will last?" Mustang asks me, watching the water from our place in the sand.
"The peace."
"It would be the first time," I say. She grimaces and leans into me, closing her eyes. At least we have this.
I smile, reminded of Cassius as an eagle skims low over the water before rising up through the mist and disappearing in the trees that jut from the top of a sea stack. Have I passed your test?
My test? She asks.
Ever since you blocked my ship from leaving Phobos, you've been testing me. I thought I passed on the ice, but it didn't stop there.
You noticed,
she says with a mischievous little grin. It fades, and she brushes hair from her eyes. I'm sorry that I couldn't just follow you. I needed to see if you could build. I needed to see if my people could live in your world. Now, I understand that, I say. But there's more to it. Something changed when you saw my mother, my brother. Something opened up in you. She nods, eyes still on the water. There's something I have to tell you. I look over at her. You lied to me for nearly 6 years. Since the moment we met. In the Lycos tunnel, you broke what we had. That trust. That feeling of closeness we built. Piecing that together takes time. I needed to see if we could find what we lost. I needed to see if I could trust you. You know you can.
I do now, she says. But...
I frown.
Mustang, you're shaking.
Just let me finish.
I didn't want to lie to you.
But I didn't know how you would react, what you would do. I needed you to make the choice to be more than a killer, not just for me, but for someone else, too. She looks past me to the blue sky, where a ship coasts lazily down. I hold my hand up against the autumn sun to watch it approach. Are we expecting company? I ask warily. Of a sort. She stands. I join her. And she goes to her tiptoes to kiss me. It is a gentle, long